I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Almost 40 million Americans have lost their jobs in the last few months because the pandemic has shut down large swaths of the country. While Congress and the White House have pumped trillions of dollars into the economy, our guest Delaware Senator Chris Coons says that expanding national service programs like AmeriCorps could provide jobs, especially for young people entering the workforce, and could help bridge the many barriers that divide us as a nation. He sponsored legislation, the Pandemic Response and Opportunity Through National Service Act, that's getting bipartisan and bicameral support. It would add as many as 300,000 new national service workers who would help with COVID-19 relief and other needed programs. Senator Coons joins us on Radio Times, and nice to have you back with us on the show.
Good morning, Marty. It's always good to be on with you.
Nice to have you with us. I know you're getting a lot of support for this legislation. Do we know when it's going to pass and get to the president's desk?
No, predicting when anything is going to pass in the current Congress is a risky undertaking. But what I am encouraged by is that we've got nearly 90 co-sponsors at this point, and it's broadly bipartisan in the House. We've got some senior Republican appropriators as well as senior Democratic appropriators, and we've got folks who are brand new senators and House members and folks who've been serving for decades, both Republicans and Democrats in the House. And I am optimistic that this is a good way for us to meet this moment. As you mentioned, there are tens of millions of Americans unemployed, and that tends to skew towards younger, less skilled or experienced workers who are often the first to be laid off. There are millions of folks who are currently in college or who were hoping to go to college, and they are often those who struggle most to get that first job. National service, which has been around now for decades, already has an existing nationwide infrastructure. Every state has a commission, typically appointed by the governor, that oversees the AmeriCorps programs in that state, and they are run locally. They are typically partnerships between nonprofits, state or local government, private sector support, and I had a hand in helping launch and run one of the first national AmeriCorps programs. This was back in the 90s. We had sites in 15 different cities all over America where the programming, the recruitment, the training, the support was done locally. And there's already great programs in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania that are expanding in order to respond to the challenge of this pandemic, to do critical public health work as well as community support. And that's also a model I'm encouraging for expansion here in the state of Delaware.
And let me pick up on a couple of things. What kinds of jobs are we talking about? And has the pandemic, has COVID-19 limited the kinds of jobs that you think could be part of this program?
Well, so first, there's roughly 75,000 AmeriCorps members all over the United States in every state and territory now that are serving in programs that do a very wide range of things, from public health programs to public safety programs, things that help with conservation and environmental efforts to things that help in schools. So there's a wide range of existing established long-term programs locally. Some of them have had to suspend or shut down because of the pandemic, because the kind of work they were doing really couldn't be continued. But many of them have found ways to adapt, to shift, and to engage in addressing the new emergent needs because of this combined public health and economic crisis. I had a conversation just last week with James Winfield of Civic Works in Baltimore, and they've taken two different streams of service they were already engaged in, one that was helping with sustainable agriculture, local farmers markets, dealing with food deserts, and trying to help in low-income communities in Baltimore with access to healthy, tasty, quality food. They are also doing a separate program that works with shut-in seniors. They combine those two efforts to increase the availability of healthy and nutritious food to shut-in seniors, what I would call meals on wheels on steroids, to help them sustain both engagement and access to food for low-income seniors who lacked mobility and lacked a way to get out to the grocery store, both because of understandable public health concerns and because of a lack of a family support network. That's just one of dozens of examples we could talk about how programs like Youth Build and City Year that are long established, that have a strong presence in our region, continue to do great social work and continue to do great community and national service work.
As you mentioned, for many people, these are a first job or among the first jobs that they have. Are there efforts to increase what someone would get paid to do this? Obviously, they're not going to get rich. It's going to be kind of a basic salary. But how important is that, do you think?
It's very important. That's one of the three key pillars of the legislation that I've been working to move in the Senate and the House. AmeriCorps members get $15,000 on average a year.
Wow.
That's just like bare minimum wage. That is not much to live on. And that in some ways has constrained national service. And if we raise it to roughly $22,000 a year, which is what's proposed in the bill, that's still pretty modest salary. But it makes it more possible for a broader range of people, range of ages and backgrounds and life experiences to join national service programs. Second, just increasing the number of slots. There's currently 75,000 Americans who serve in AmeriCorps, but year after year, programs get five or six or seven times as many applicants as they have space available. So for programs like Public Allies or Teach for America, City Year, or Youth Build, they often have many times more Americans interested in serving than are able to serve. That's another piece, would be doubling from 75,000 to 150,000. And then doubling again the next year to 300,000. That's the core purpose of the bill. But then last is the education award. If you spend a year in full-time service to our nation through AmeriCorps, currently you earn the equivalent of a Pell Grant, roughly $6,000, to either pay off your student loans or to help pay for future education. We'd like to see that increase significantly, hopefully by at least doubling it. And the legislation urges increasing it enough that if you do 2 years of full-time service, you earn enough for tuition at a typical state college or university around the country. Not room and board, but just tuition. It is a civilian, modest version of the much more robust GI Bill that recognizes the service and sacrifice of our members of the armed forces.
So something like maybe $10,000-$15,000 a year. I'm just trying to think what a university or a state school costs somebody.
That's right. It's $15,000 to $18,000 range. Mm-hmm. It varies, but across the country, that would be the national average.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Delaware Senator Chris Coons. We're talking about legislation that he has sponsored. It's got a bit of a clunky name, I would say, but it's called the Pandemic Response and Opportunity Through National Service Act. In a nutshell, wanting to expand national service programs like AmeriCorps to deal with the economic challenges of the pandemic and also to bridge some of the barriers that seem to divide us as a nation. What do you think about this? Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. I'll be talking with our second guest about what other presidents have done, and it's a long list, starting with FDR and probably going even before him, of these national service programs. It is pretty clear that President Trump has no particular interest in supporting this idea that you have. Is that going to be an impediment?
It is a challenge if the president actively opposes it, but no one has yet presented it to him directly. And so given that there has been sustained Republican support in both the House and Senate over many years for national service, there have been critics. There have been those who have tried to trim it or eliminate it, but it has survived and frankly thrived since the 90s. So that's in no small part because we've got some strong advocates. As I think I mentioned, Congressman Tom Cole, who is a ranking Republican on the relevant authorizing committee, and Hal Rogers, who's a critical senior appropriator. These are senior and experienced Republicans who are co-sponsors of this bill in the House. So my hope is that the Trump administration will recognize that creating an opportunity for hundreds of thousands of younger Americans to engage in serving our country is a great way to meet this moment. It won't solve 33 million unemployed Americans, but the multiples, there's study after study, Marty, that shows that for every AmeriCorps member, there's a multiple of the federal investment in terms of the impact on the community. They have a sustained impact. It has a cumulative positive impact. It both helps the young people who typically participate in terms of earning a college opportunity, in terms of giving them skills and exposure to communities and people often different from themselves or where they'd grown up. There are some positive aspects to serving in a rapport in terms of getting to know a group of people from throughout your region or your immediate community. But more broadly, I think it has had sustained support from mayors and from governors of both parties all over the country because they've seen the impact. Mayor Garcetti of Los Angeles, who's been a great partner in this effort, teamed up with the mayor of Oklahoma City, Mayor Holt, and they put out a proposal for a national service corps like this. They've got a bipartisan letter that's been signed by more than 50 mayors. And frankly, there's more than 100 national nonprofit and public health organizations that have said this is a great idea for the moment, something that could help encourage Americans and contribute to our recovery from this pandemic.
And just a couple of more minutes here. What's the cost of a program like this, of ramping it up?
It depends how large it actually ends up being. But the price tag is somewhere in the $5 to $6 billion a year range, depending on how many slots, how much you increase the annual stipend, and how much you increase the education award. There's essentially three different ways that the ultimate package that gets considered by Congress could change. But if we went from $75,000 to $150,000 and we increased the Ed Award and the living amount, you know, that would be $4 to $5 billion a mm-hmm. year. Then if we increase even further the education award, it increases accordingly. So one of the challenges is finding what compromise we can reach between the House and the Senate. Many Republican senators have said that the House bill, the big House bill, the HEROES Act that just came over, is dead on arrival. So I've been actively talking to Republican senators and House Democrats in the last few days. And I'm hopeful that we will come up with a proposal that will at least double the size of national service and increase the living stipend and the education award.
Almost out of time here, but you have called for a moment of silence to mark the fact that we're almost at 100,000 deaths from COVID-19. Is that on track to happen? What's the status of that?
Well, that's a great question. There are faith leaders all over our country who have responded to a request to begin a dialogue about how do we as a nation reflect and remember the 100,000 that we have so far lost in this pandemic. This is meant to simply recognize that lots of those who have died were people who voluntarily took on risks because of their service, nurses and orderlies, doctors, police officers, firefighters, but also those who serve as grocery clerks and who are cleaning offices. There are lots of people who are public servants who took on risks in this pandemic and have died as a result. And there are so many families who have not been able to commemorate them, to remember them, or to have a family-oriented funeral. So we're making progress in that direction. I think you'll see some action in the next week.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times. Delaware Senator Chris Coons, thank you very much.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. More after this very short break. We'll be talking about voluntary national service. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Past presidents have called on our better angels and asked us to do something for our country when faced with tough times. FDR's Public Works Program helped support Americans during the Great Depression. The Peace Corps was begun under the John F. Kennedy administration, VISTA under the Johnson administration. The first President Bush touted his 1,000 points of light, and AmeriCorps was begun when Bill Clinton was president. We just heard from Senator Chris Coons about legislation in Congress that has bipartisan support to expand national service programs, both helping the unemployed and helping to bridge the many divides we face as a nation. Joining us and staying with us for the rest of the hour is John Bridgeland. He's the CEO of the public policy firm Civic Enterprises, also vice chairman of the Service Year Alliance. He's former director of the White House Domestic Policy Council and the USA Freedom Corps and served in both the Bush and Obama administrations. And John Bridgeland, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Marty, great to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, always want to hear from you, especially on this particular topic about national service. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. We are in this crisis. Crisis can mean opportunity. Are we ready for an expanded national service in this country?
I think we are. It's just so encouraging to have the leadership of Senator Chris Coons, you know, somebody who literally started two AmeriCorps programs many years ago, one to tutor students across the country and another to assist fire departments. And so his authentic voice and strong leadership pulling together members of Congress on both sides of the aisle to support an expansion during this crisis is absolutely critical. You know, it was back in the Great Depression where we had these levels of unemployment. I just looked and saw that youth unemployment is almost 28% in April. I'm sure it'll be a third of the country by May. And Franklin Roosevelt called Congress into emergency session, and within 3 months, through what was called the Civilian Conservation Corps, had 250,000 young unemployed men working on our public lands. And at the end of the program, 3 million young Americans had served their nation. You know, instead of being festering in the streets and unemployed, they were able to support their families. They planted 3 billion trees, protected 84 million acres of land, which is equivalent to our entire national park system, and really, you know, saved their own lives. And it's that spirit that I think people like Senator Coons are bringing to this effort today. And young people want to serve their country, and AmeriCorps and other terrific national service programs can enable them to do that.
Is that the scale that you are looking at? I mean, clearly the need is extraordinary. We're talking about, you know, almost 40 million Americans out of work. Not all of them are going to do national service, but are the kind of scale that you described under the Franklin Roosevelt administration, is that what we should aim for?
I think so, and it's exactly what Senator Coons is aiming for. I mean, I call it the service opportunity gap. It's just odd that five to six as many young people in the country, and with unemployment it will be higher, are literally raising their hand every year to serve their country through outstanding organizations like City Year and Habitat for Humanity and Conservation Corps. And we're being turned away. You know, we're turning away the idealism and talents of a generation. And so we should at least close the service opportunity gap and expand AmeriCorps and VISTA and these outstanding programs, you know, to the levels that Senator Coons has proposed. And so we're all working very hard. Voices for National Service, Ann Maher Connelly, General Stanley McChrystal, and Jesse at the Service Year Alliance, and all these extraordinary Americans are stepping up to support this great cause.
Your phone is not perfect. We're going to hang in there and just, you know, hope that it stays strong. I asked this of Senator Coons, and it's not to be partisan or even political here, but, you know, we've had past presidents who have supported this idea of national service. It's pretty clear that we don't have anyone in the White House or a president in the White House today that has that same kind of enthusiasm for what you're talking about.
Yes, and can you hear me okay, Marty?
Yeah, I think it was just you've been going a little bit in and out, but hang in there. We're gonna make this work. We're gonna make this work. I promise you.
President Bush 41 seeded AmeriCorps. Clinton established it, and then President Bush 43 grew it by 50% after 9/11 with strong support in the Congress, and then Senators Kennedy and Hatch in 2008, 2009, supported by John McCain and Barack Obama both, passed hugely bipartisan legislation to grow AmeriCorps and other programs. It's interesting, President Trump, when he was a candidate in New Hampshire, was asked, do you support national service? And he gave a terrific answer. He said, you know, I think national service is a beautiful thing. These young people who deploy their talents to help the needs across the country through nonprofits and faith-based institutions, and I will just wait and see. I will grow national service. So we hope he follows through on that commitment and joins Senator Coons and others in the Congress to, you know, have this time of crisis be filled with some hope and idealism to respond to the times.
Let me get a caller on the air. And this is Glenn calling us probably from Philadelphia. And Glenn, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I think it's a brilliant move to expand this type of work. My daughter, who graduated from Wisconsin, not sure what she wanted to do, went to City Year for 2 years and taught in an elementary school, helped out. And then she went to Teach for America for 2 years for her master's degree and stayed in the same school and is about to start a PhD program. I had no idea wow. that living on $15,000 a year would get to the point of someone wanting to do that. But when I think about our food system, having people who want to learn how to grow and help both in urban and also in rural areas to go back to farming, this would be a wonderful thing to help some farmers also and help young people learn how to farm.
Well, Glenn, I see from my computer here, screen, that you're former director of PhilAbundance. So maybe she was inspired by some of those dinner table conversations.
That's right. But I think that, I think also we had a lot of people who went through Vista and came to us and went on from there. And it was and a lot of the nonprofits in Philadelphia throughout the country have Vista volunteers who get a hold on what they may want to do in their life and get a, the ability to sort of intern, see what's out there, and then go on from there. And it's a wonderful way for young people to figure out their life and to help the community at the same time, as opposed to not having anything sure. or finding just a job in the market that is not as valuable.
Well,
so
Glenn,
I totally approve it.
I hear you, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. John, you want to respond to Glenn's comment?
I sure do, Glenn. That's so wonderful. You know, what we find, the impact of these national service programs on the young people themselves who serve in them are dramatic. Both the AmeriCorps, Peace Corps, Vista, it informs their career choice. It activates their passions. A longitudinal study from the Corporation for National and Community Service shows that it cultivates civic habits, more volunteering, voting, participating in community projects over a lifetime. And even the business community is telling us during this tough economic time, they love the idea of expanding national service because it will keep and cultivate the very skills they're looking for in their workers: collaboration, problem solving, leadership, empathy. As these young people reenter, the battered economy, when it eventually recovers, they'll be prepared for those jobs. So it's great to hear the story of your daughter. Congratulations all the way through PhD. And so many
quite
young people could have a similar experience.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. And Glenn, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We're talking about expanding national service or public service, the kind of jobs that we would associate with City Year or AmeriCorps or Teach for America or Vista. There are numerous programs that do this kind of work. And again, John Bridgeland, our guest, he's the CEO of the public policy firm. It's called Civic Enterprises, also vice chair of the Service Year Alliance. And you can join us. We want your stories, your questions, your comments, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. John, did you do one of these programs, you yourself?
No, I've done 15 years of public service, which is, part of the continuum of service to the country. But I've had the privilege when I was in the White House of overseeing and working to grow the Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, Vista, Conservation Corps, Youth Build, all these extraordinary programs, and seeing how young people come together. You know, when you think about the divisions in our country, imagine a generation coming together across race, ethnicity, income level, faith, politics, to do shared work, to learn to listen to one another, work together to solve problems. I think I see it every day. It cultivates leadership skills, and particularly in young people who, society sometimes uses problems to be solved when they're really potential to be unleashed. I co-chair something called the Earth Conservation Corps with Robert Kennedy's widow, Ethel Kennedy, and Bob Nixon, and this young woman who was homeless on the streets, had dropped out from high school, was raising two kids, found the Earth Conservation Corps, and we found her. And she did 2 years of national service, was part of the team to clean up the Anacostia River. They brought back the nation's symbol, the bald eagle, to the nation's capital. And, you know, not only brought skills and a better environment, but hope to this community. And now she's working at the Corps Network to give the same national service experience to thousands, hundreds of thousands of young people across the country, because it saved her life. And national service can do this for a generation.
Let me get you to respond to some of the criticism of national service programs. One is that you just end up paying people who would volunteer for this kind of work. What's your response to that?
So it's interesting. There are about 70 million Americans who regularly volunteer. Traditional volunteering, it's episodic, you know, maybe on a weekend or an evening or in their free time. This is different. National service is a significant investment in young and older people alike for a full year of work. And let me show you the power of it. So I go into a Habitat for Humanity build. And by the way, AmeriCorps Habitat for Humanity has, with Vistas, they've been able to build twice as many homes as sites that don't have Vistas. And so those AmeriCorps members, they're there full time. They organize the traditional volunteers, usually 27 to 35, as many volunteers per every national service member. And they expand the ability of these nonprofit organizations to do public work. Columbia University showed that for every dollar spent by taxpayers on national service, we get a $2 return on investment and a $4 return on society, because instead of having a lot of people riding in the wagon, they're helping to pull the wagon. They become productive workers. They generate revenue, and they obviously are not on social services as much. So national service has a huge economic impact and a really good return on investment.
Here's another criticism that I read about, that this is just another big government program. What do you say to that?
Yeah, it's not at all. It's so interesting that the person who actually envisioned and started the Corporation for National Community Service, which is so ably run today by Barbara Stewart, who's also a businesswoman. It's one of my favorite agencies in government because it's a public-private partnership. Hmm. It's actually big citizenship, not big government. When you look at what the federal government does, it's providing through AmeriCorps and VISTA and the National Civilian Conservation Corps, a community corps, basically investments in local nonprofits, faith-based institutions, and agencies to support the work of strategies at the local level in conservation, education, health, disaster preparedness and response. It's the exact opposite of a lot of these other federal agencies that do have big government approaches. This is really big citizenship, and that's why, you know, Bill Buckley, after 9/11, this great conservative Republican, came into the White House to meet with me and shared his book, Gratitude, and said, we all want to be knights. And this is a great way in which, with a little government and support, if you invest in your country, we'll invest in you. It's like a GI Bill, but more modest, as Senator Kuhn says. And it really is a fabulous return, both to efficient public problem solving, locally controlled, young people who develop and cultivate skills. And then perhaps most importantly, Thomas Jefferson said that the pursuit of happiness was not just an individual right, but a cooperative enterprise that we help one another achieve. And if we're going to restore that notion of enabling everybody to have an opportunity to the American dream, we need big ideas like national service that can knit this country back together at a time of tremendous national division.
Let me read an email from Sean, and then we'll take a call from Danny. Sean says, I graduated college in 2009 at the height of the recession. When the only job I could find was in retail, I joined AmeriCorps VISTA. Once my service was completed, it was easy to build a career at first with the Red Cross and eventually to a fulfilling position in healthcare on the front lines of this pandemic. Sean, thank you for that. Let me get to Danny. Danny joining us probably from the Philadelphia area. Danny, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Sure.
I'm calling you from Malvern here.
I want to congratulate your guest and Senator Coons for bringing this up. And I think everything they said deserves a second. But I have one addition.
Sure.
The notion that this is a big idea is, I don't think, correct. This is a very, very small drop in the bucket. We've got 40 million unemployed Americans. All the folks in the people gathering activities, stadia, restaurants, bars, tourism, et cetera, will remain unemployed for the next 12 to 24 months, and we all know that. So of the 40 million people unemployed currently, we're going to have half or more of them continue to be unemployed. We need a national service program that addresses millions or even tens of millions. And the notion that we're going to start small is a spit in the ocean. It doesn't get us anywhere in terms of mobilizing national attention. And what we need to do is we need to move from reinforcing AmeriCorps to the United States military.
I hear you. You know what, Danny?
United States military. Yeah.
No, I hear you. You know what? We're up on a clock here. Let me hold on to that thought.
Right. You got it.
I got it. And I think you sent us an email about
you got
your idea. Yeah. The idea is think bigger and even think the military, which is a provocative thing to think about. And I do want to talk about it after this very short break. That was Danny calling us. And we're talking about expanding national service programs to deal with both the pandemic and also to deal with some of the divides that really hurt us as a nation. John Bridgeland staying with us for the rest of the hour. Again, CEO of the public policy firm Civic Enterprises, Vice Chairman of Service Year Alliance. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can do what Danny did. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. John, we'll pick up on his question after the short break, and we've got a third guest who'll be joining us as well. So do stay with us. Much more after this break. We'll be right back. This is Radio.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and we're talking about expanding national service, what that would look like, what the opportunities would look like. Advocates of programs like AmeriCorps point to things like essential skills and experiences that young people often gain from this kind of work. And again, John Bridgeland, CEO of Civic Enterprises, who has worked for two decades to expand national service, is our guest. And joining us is Cecilia Moe. She's an assistant professor of political science at the University of California at Berkeley. And she has looked at the impact of Teach for America on its participants. And Cecilia Moe, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And if you don't mind, just hold on. I have a couple of questions for you, but I want to give John a chance to reply to what Danny was saying right before the break. He was saying this is all well and good, but it's not big enough, and we need to look to expand the military, as he put it. How does that fit into your thinking?
So amen to Danny, a National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service that actually looked at the integration of service across these three spheres of influence, people who serve in the military, people who have an opportunity to do a year of civilian national service, and then those hundreds of thousands of terrific public servants who work at the local, state, and federal levels in government year in and year out to combat polio and COVID-19 and all the extraordinary things that happen through government service. They propose to increase civilian national service to at least 1 million a year annually. Mm. And General Stanley McChrystal, who chairs our effort and our group at Service Year Alliance, supports the common expectation and opportunity for all 18 to 28-year-olds to do a year of national service, which would be up to 4 million, you know, in every cohort. So our view is we want to grow this as high as we possibly can, because Danny's right. It needs to meet the need. And Franklin Roosevelt wasn't shy about it. 3 million young Americans who were unemployed did extraordinary national service work through the Civilian Conservation Corps with huge impact on the country that we still see to this day as we go around to national and state parks.
Sure. Sure. Cecilia, let me get you in on the conversation. And you did some interesting research looking at the impact of Teach for America, its impact on the various participants. First of all, why were you interested in this?
Absolutely. It's wonderful to hear all the impact findings that John Bridgeland noted. And those questions were really what interested me. I mean, historically, political leaders, regardless of political party, have really celebrated service programs, believing that citizen service really changes people for the better, that national service can help us strengthen the cords that bind us together as a people, rekindle the spirit of democracy in an age of uncertainty, and recognize that we are responsible for one another and that we are members of a true community. And just to be clear, these are words from presidents, Republican presidents, Democratic presidents, and they sound amazing, and that's been the impetus of my work of whether or not those lofty goals that national service has really had is true. As the question could be, like, when we look at the effects of impact, I mean, the impact of service, and looking at what alumni have really been saying about how service has affected them, one could criticize those studies as saying, well, maybe it's that national service programs are attracting the kinds of people who would actually say that service has really inspired them, that, you know, that they're really interested in doing, you know, public service work, serving the poor, what have you. And that criticism has been really something that I've been interested in, you know, whether or not service is just sorting out our population to find the types of people that are service oriented, or is it that service actually has an impact on the participants themselves?
And what did you find?
So that was why I was really interested in doing work with Teach for America, which is an AmeriCorps program. They have a selection process that really enables us to say something causal. Right? It is really difficult to sort of sort out whether or not we see a correlation or something that we can say is X causes Y. And what Teach for America has is actually a cutoff, right? A cutoff score where, you know, those who are above the cutoff are admitted and those below the cutoff are not. And so what we can actually do is compare those who are barely admitted to those who are barely rejected to actually be able to estimate a causal effect of participation itself.
I don't mean to rush you along. We have a limited time. I'm really interested. So what were your findings, Cecilia?
Yeah, so the findings were amazing. Everything that John noted in terms of increased empathy, increased perspective taking, reduced prejudice, a sense of an understanding of how inequality really looks in this country, all of those things dramatically shifted after participation. And these effects were durable even 7 years after participating. So these weren't sort of short-lived effects. Mm-hmm. They were durable effects that in some respects actually grew over time. They weren't things that sort of decayed kind of 1 or 2 years later. These effects were actually stronger as years went by, which really reflects the profound change that national service has on its participants in terms of changing the trajectory of their life and their belief systems, their civic habits, their career choices, and so forth.
Let me toss something else, and this goes back to an experience I had the summer between high school and college. I worked in Appalachia. I think it was for 8 or 10 weeks. It was 1967. It sure affected me, and I saw things, a kind of rural poverty I frankly did not know existed at that time as a young person. I know it was good for me. I often think about the people that lived in this really ramshackle little cluster of shacks. Whether was it good for them? Was their life improved? Did they have the kind of horizons expanded that I did? Cecilia, just quickly, if you don't mind, because I got a lot of people that want to join us, and I know John probably wants to weigh in on that as well.
Of course. I mean, that's an important question. And at least for Teach for America, there has been a parallel set of studies that have really looked at, well, what is the effect of TFA participants on the children that they serve? as it's really important to ensure that participation is not, you know, somehow detrimental to the communities that the participants are assigned to. And at least with those studies, the most rigorous studies have shown that there are no detrimental effects, at least as it relates to student test scores. So at least on that metric, one doesn't see and observe that there's somehow a less quality kind of product service that these fellows are providing. If anything, one might actually see improvements, and that was the case at least for secondary math, for instance.
Oh, that's interesting. John, you want to weigh in on that? And then we got a lot of comments I want to read as well.
I'll do it quickly. Thanks, Cecilia. I'd love hearing your perspective. And she's right. What's interesting about the Teach for America study is that it proves the proposition that these AmeriCorps core members actually get greater empathy and reinforces this notion that we could heal across divisions. Wendy Kopp will tell you the real purpose of Teach for America is to cultivate a generation of leaders who will lead education systems across the country and improve outcomes for kids. And that's exactly what's happening. Also quickly, City Year, improves the early warning indicators of dropout attendance, course performance in reading and math and behavior, while boosting high school graduation rates. The Detroit Urban Safety Corps lowered crime rates in neighborhoods in which the members have served. I mean, Minnesota Reading Corps, program after program increasingly has extraordinary evidence of public impact. We know the impact on the kids, but now we're seeing, the impact on solving public problems. So Senator Coons is right. Cecilia is right. We have the evidence. We need the will. We need to think like FDR and get these programs.
Let's do it, right?
Now.
Fair
Let's
enough.
Do it.
Okay, I hear you. Let me just read some more comments here. And again, you can join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us at 1-888-477-9499. Gosh, a lot of comments. Let me read a bunch of them. Here's Sean. I did Teach for America. It was an incredible experience. I'm now running for city council at large, probably in Philadelphia. It's a direct result of my time with the program. A comment from Dan, after the 2008 recession, I was disappointed in how our infrastructure suffered. Is there a way to use AmeriCorps to repair our parks and bridges and other public amenities? Let me read one more. A Facebook comment from David. Our son served with AmeriCorps immediately after college. He worked hard and made lifelong friends. No one knows about this program! Exclamation point. People are surprised to hear about the chance to give their kids a bridge year. Let me pick up on what Dan said about infrastructure, and I'll toss that to you, John. I think it's something like $4 trillion. The some kind of a core of engineers, I believe, came up with the price tag to repair our roads and bridges. Is that something we should think of as a kind of national service project, or is that something we should just get our government to do somehow?
Yeah, absolutely. National service can play a role. There's something called the conservation maintenance backlog that's billions and billions of dollars, and we can deploy AmeriCorps members, the Corps network, and conservation corps all across the country, which are really the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt, to actually repair bridges, roads, rails to trails, parks, in a multiplicity of ways. National service can play a really constructive role in a infrastructure package. Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Cecilia, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, it's great that the caller talked about his interest in running for city council after his time in service, as that's also something that I looked at, whether or not participation in TFA translated to greater interest in running for office. Mm-hmm. And there I saw a profound change, in particularly among underrepresented populations like people of color and women, that, after participation, it really translated to an increased interest in political participation in the form of actually running for office. And secondly, to the point of growing civic habits, we're also seeing evidence that it's really increasing interest in voting, voter turnout, which is really important given that youth voter turnout is particularly low and something that we really need to address.
Here's Stephanie, who said, "Is this? I'm not sure if this is a phone call or if I should just read it, but anyway, I will read it." She says, "I work for the internship department at a university, and what I've heard from returning service alumni is that they feel financially exploited when they return. They make very little, also have student loans, which aren't all forgiven by the program. How can we fix this?" And John, that seems to be related to specific internships. They used to be unpaid, and now they have to be paid at least something. But the sense of being exploited, yeah. is that something that we should address?
So I think part of the sacrifice of the service is actually, serving at rates that are below market. I'll never forget when Ronald Reagan started the California Conservation Corps under the motto, low pay, hard work, miserable conditions. He was overwhelmed with applications.
Wow.
That's just the American spirit. But Senator Coons is exactly right. In talking to a lot of the young people, below poverty stipends that were crafted 20 and 30 years ago need to be updated. And that's why Senator Coons' bill to increase the living stipend, also to increase these education awards as tuitions, tuitions that are off the charts. Let's at least give young people the opportunity to fully fund the cost of a public university system in their state for every year of national service they do. That would be a real, modest form of a GI Bill that could really educate, train, and equip a generation to have these civic habits that will benefit the country in so many ways.
We've been talking largely about young people. What about old people or older people, John?
So senior, older Americans, a wonderful person named Mark Friedman and Phyllis Siegel, who work on senior corps programs and basically Encore careers. We have the largest demographic, baby boomers who have, they're living longer, they're healthier, they're well-educated, they have skills and energy across a lifetime to share. And so these senior corps programs actually, in terms of numbers, are our largest national service programs in the United States. And they do things, like RSVP and senior companions and working foster grandparents, working across generations to bring hope and talent and their energies often to young people or other older Americans to keep them vital and active and serving in their community. So I think young people is critical as a rite of passage. But I also think we should be doing more on enlisting older Americans to give back to their country.
Cecilia, we're almost out of time, but, it's hard to find a critic of what we've been talking about. I mean, in many ways,
sure.
It seems like a win-win-win-win-win, no matter how you look at it. And yet, it's still, as one of our listeners said, still people don't know about it. Or it's not touted the way we tout other parts of our economy or our country.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do about that?
That's right. And, it's been great to sort of see the kind of creativity of individuals to really grow this ecosystem. Programs like Global Citizen Year, they're trying to then kind of celebrate this idea of a gap year and get youth into service between high school and college. And I think these conversations to really increase and expand the program in different forms is one that's important. And I think it's, when we're looking at the evidence, as I said, I had suspicions that, these effects that were from these qualitative studies were real, but it wasn't clear to me whether or not this was something that we can really look, that we would see really clear evidence of, like when we look at the full population. And my study involved over 30,000 participants. And in these studies, I've just never seen effect sizes as robust as they are. Wow. And this wow. just tells me that this is something that really needs to grow. I mean, I've looked at a lot of interventions to, reduce, say, prejudice, to increase tolerance, to grow democratic values. And I've never seen effect sizes like the ones that I've seen. So hopefully we just keep on investing in these programs.
Well, I appreciate you joining us on Radio Time. Cecilia Mo, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And John Bridgeland, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thanks, Marty.
You're very welcome. And we began with Delaware Senator Chris Coons. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of the show, and it's produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Artie Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.